Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
All right, so welcome back to Zero Block 30. It's me, your boy Uncle Chaps, joined again by Connor. How you doing tonight, Connor?
I'm doing very well. How are you this evening?
I'm doing good, man. Still kind of riding high off of last week when we had Robin. Kind of a surreal interview, you know?
Yeah.
Like, from all the shit you hear about the Bin Laden raid to actually have him on and talk to him a little bit beforehand and kind of get a feel of who he is as a guy.
Yeah, it's definitely different. But I would be remiss if I did not mention a happy anniversary to you. You had a big anniversary this week, right?
I did, yeah. It was the big seven-year anniversary.
So oh, okay. Nice.
That went well. I had to rush back from New York last week, from being in New York last week, to get back to Texas. My daughter's birthday was on Saturday, and the anniversary was on Monday. So it was a pretty big weekend.
Couple full-body reds.
Oh, yeah, a couple bodies of full body reds, man. That's how we do it.
But yeah, no, it's kind of crazy when you put it into context and you kind of think about who Rob is and what he did in history, and then to have him just sitting 2 feet away from us and having that conversation was, as you said, it was surreal, and it was a real treat. And we're hoping, you know, Rob had expressed interest in coming back, and hopefully we can get him back and do some more things with him because you know, I can say for myself, my opinion of him certainly changed.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Like, when we went into it, I was under the impression that he was a big dickhead. Like, yeah. He was like that. He was real full of himself. And from talking to him before, I don't think that's the case. And I think a lot of people come off as that way. Like, you come off as a dickhead or very conceited. But that's so common, especially in military communities with guys that have done some shit. Like, you're not trying to, but it's just you have this air of bravado about you, and I don't think that most people get that. But I didn't feel like it was a level that I wasn't used to with guys mm-hmm. that are in that level of operation, you know?
Yeah, it's just by the nature of the business of what he's doing. You know, there's going to be a little added bravado, as you said, a little extra confidence just by the sheer nature of the missions that they're doing. But yeah, I could tell from Jump Street when we were talking with him before we even jumped in the studio, you get a certain impression about the guy when you see him on TV, you read the books, and it's easy to think he's a dickbag. But then you talk to him and you realize, oh man, this guy was just in the military just like you and I, and from the beginning we were able to have a really easy conversation, and he ended up being a real nice guy, and my opinion of him completely changed.
Yeah, because if I shot Bin Laden, I'd be a fucking dick. Like, I'd be so cocky, man.
I mean, I'm cocky, and I didn't shoot Bin Laden. I didn't do, you know, an eighth of what he did, and I'm super cocky, so.
Yeah, I just wear really nice pants. That's it.
Exactly. I just try to come off like I know what I'm doing. That's about it.
Yeah, so.
Oh, but his wife was very complimentary of my outfit.
Dude, so, well, your outfit looked good.
Thank you.
And I mentioned that last week on the show.
Thank you.
I mentioned that your outfit looks, and you look handsome today. You have an outfit for radio today. So.
Well, you do too. Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Nice.
Appreciate it. So it was kind of a big week. We didn't have the presidential debates. So that's coming up tomorrow, or Sunday, if you're listening. So we had the vice presidential debate, and I thought that it went pretty well considering some of the events that happened earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. I thought that Tim Kaine could have took it to a whole different level than he did. And the fact that he didn't bring up the PTSD comments was kind of surprising to me.
Very, actually. I mean, that was almost like the low-hanging fruit that he should have jumped on that from the beginning. And
he took a lot of the low-hanging fruit, but didn't take the biggest piece.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That was kind of surprising for sure. So I don't know. Maybe he was instructed not to bring it up, or I don't know why he didn't take that low-hanging fruit. But overall, what did you think of those comments earlier this week?
Well, in case you've been, like, living under a rock, I'll go over some of the comments that Trump made just so we have a reference point. So Trump said this week, when you talk about mental health problems, when people come back from war and combat and they see things that maybe a lot of folks in this room have seen many times, and you're strong and you can handle it, but a lot of people can't. They see horror stories. They see events you couldn't see in a movie. Nobody would believe it. You know, when you hear 22 suicides a day, it's a big part of your question. But when you hear 22 suicides a day, you should never be. That should never be. So we're going to be addressing that very strongly. And the whole mental health issue is going to be a very important issue when I take over. And the VA is going to be fixed in so many ways. And there's going to be the ways we're going to help. And that's, in many respects, going to be the number one thing we have to do, because I think it's really been left behind. So that was his direct quote, completely in context. And when you take it in context, because a lot of people, including myself, when I originally heard the comments, I was like, this motherfucker. But when you take the comments, like what they are in the totality, I don't think it's bad. In fact, I think it's good. His idea behind what he was saying was perfect. We do need to do more about it. We do need to do more things through the VA. The problem that I have with what he said is he's built such a persona that the moment that he says something, you take it as face value and you don't search for the context in it. If President Obama said those things, you would look for the content surrounding what he said. You wouldn't just take it on the face that he's saying that some people are weak. And that was the implication that a lot of media gave. Is that what you got out of it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, obviously we live in the world where all you need is 140 characters to tell your story. So, you know, one of the common fallacies of a debate is when you try to make I think the Latin term is argumentum ad hominem, when you're just attacking.
Shit.
Yeah, I just dropped some Latin on you, some Catholic school knowledge.
Good Lord.
But basically what that translates to is attacking the person. And I think that's what people are always looking to do on both sides. You know, there are people I see on my Twitter feed all day, every day. They spend their entire day just trying to attack either Clinton or Trump. And, I mean, based on what Trump said, if you just take it in 140 characters, yeah, my first reaction was, gosh, this guy is such a dope. And, I mean, I think a lot of times he is the dope. But
100% is your response, because we texted about it right away.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was before I watched the video.
As soon as it happened, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to be explosive on Zero Block 30 this week, because those kind of comments would really fucking set me off.
Yeah, what's crazy is I'll go so far as to say I think he meant it as a compliment to the folks in the room. He was trying to say that you guys are good at what you do, you're strong, but then he should have just ended it there. Or he could have pivoted and said something to the effect of the 22 individuals a day who are committing veterans who are committing suicide. He could have phrased it a lot better than what he did, but overall, it wasn't a good look for him.
Right, and I think that if it's just Joe Blow on the street, if it's fucking Joe Simple Brain that's like Lance Corporal down the road, I think that those are fine comments. I think that they're fine and they're good, and you can take them on the face. But when it's coming from you have to be more calculated if you're going to be the commander in chief.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I did like about it is that it brought out a lot of passion. It brought out passion when we were talking about it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought out a shit ton of passion from none other than Cool Joe, Vice President Biden. And we want to play that clip in its entirety. And normally I'm against playing long clips, but his clip was so good and so passionate that I feel like it needs to be heard over and over again. And just for the listeners at home, you know, we don't try to get too political or we're trying to endorse a candidate. So everything that he said negative about Trump, we're going to cut that shit out, because it really doesn't – that part doesn't really matter, in my opinion. So listen to these comments.
I've been in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan over 29 times. I found myself in Iraq being asked by General Ordiano, a four-star, to pin a silver medal on a young captain who had pulled someone out of a burning Humvee, risking his life. And when I went to pin it on him in front of the entire brigade, he stood at me, looked at me, said, "Sir, I don't want the medal. I don't want the medal." You know why? He said, "He died. He died, Mr. Vice President. I don't want the medal." How many nights does that kid go to sleep seeing that image in his head, dealing with it?
I have a card I carry with me, my schedule. Every single day, I have my staff contact the Defense Department early in the morning. There's a black box in the bottom of it. And it lists U.S. daily troop update. U.S. troops died in Afghanistan and Iraq. 6,753. Not plus 6,000. Not 6,700. 6,753. Because every one of those warriors left behind an entire family, a community for us. Every one of them. 52,419 wounded. But as a veteran can tell you, over 200,000 coming home with unseen wounds. Funny suicides a month. We only have one. I've been saying this, and when I said it 15 years ago, I got criticized for it. But I make no apologies. We only have one. We have a lot of obligations. We only have one sacred obligation: to care for those we send to war and to care for them and their families when they come home.
Yeah, so Joe Biden, that speech to me is one of the most poignant speeches that I've heard about veterans care in a long time. And one, because I feel like we're coming dangerously close in modern society with the post 9/11 generation to becoming how we viewed the warriors that were in the Battle of Korea, that were in the Korean War. And I feel that way because it's almost impossible for the public to maintain a level of care, an actual care, not token care, an actual care about how we feel about veterans and veterans issues, because it's been 15 years. So I really feel like the public can become, I mean, there's really no other way to phrase it, but war fatigued. I mean, not just the service member, but the public becomes war fatigued as well.
They're numb to it at this point. You know, when every night they turn on the television, something going on in Iraq, something going on in Afghanistan. Now you throw Syria into the mix, things that happen in Benghazi. It's just all these things, terrible things. And you're right, people don't want to hear about it anymore. They kind of just tune it out and they just take it as their normal day-to-day, unfortunately. But we need to bring this issue back to the forefront because, as you heard from that passion from Vice President Biden, it is a very important issue to a lot of folks, especially those families who have lost a veteran to a suicide. So I think we need to be talking about it more. And I think behind the scenes, people don't see is that we are giving more attention. You know, we shared a report from the VA today, and, you know, just some quick numbers. I mean, from they were looking at records as far back as 1979, and now they've looked at 50 million records from all 50 states, so they're getting a better idea of what the problem actually is. And I think that's important, because if we don't talk about it, it'll get pushed to the back burner, and people just don't want to deal with it, because it's not a physical scar. It's not an amputation. It's not a missing leg. It's something that's sitting deep down inside everyone that it's not always easy to diagnose.
Yeah. We talked about some of the statistics that we were reading today, and I just wanted to kind of go over some of them because you hear them all the time. You hear, I'm going to do 22 push-ups. I'm going to do these things. Well, in 2014, the latest statistics that are available, there was an average of it went down some. 20 veterans died from suicide each day. Six of those 20 users were involved in VA services. So what that tells me, not enough are in veteran services, and mm-hmm. even if they are, it's not perfect. And don't get me wrong, you're never going to fix suicide amongst veterans or anybody amongst the 35 and younger generation. It's going to be something that's there until we're really serious about mental health issues. And even then, you're not going to fix it all. You're just not. So I'm not under the impression that we're going to ever make it go to zero. You know, like that's
no,
not,
yeah.
But we can be better, and we should be better. So 6 out of the 20 users who committed suicides, of those 20 veterans a day, only 6 of 20 used VA services. Veterans accounted for 18% of all deaths from suicides among U.S. adults. So veterans are only 8% of the population. So the percentage is much, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
That was really striking to me. Any numbers really stuck out to you?
Well, I think certainly the number that I mentioned, the fact that they are, you know, taking the time to look at a lot more records to get a better idea of what is actually going on. And then I like to see that the services that they are providing, it is effective. You know, one number that did stand out to me, that through 2016, over 61,000 times emergency services were called to someone's house from someone who had reached out to the Veterans Crisis Line. And they were able to dispatch over 61,000 times emergency services that prevented these folks from potentially killing themselves. So people are trying, and we are trying to make this go away. As you said, it's never going to go away. It's always going to be there. It's almost kind of like, you know, we're searching for a cure for cancer, and you know, we're getting better and we're getting better, but we're not there yet. And it's the same thing with suicide. Suicide and depression and all these things, they are a sickness. And even though you can't see it, it does need to be addressed.
Yes, 100%. One of the numbers that was really striking to me was that 65% of veterans who died from suicide were 50 years or older.
I actually wrote that one down too.
I feel like that is extremely key. And the reason why I think that that's the way that it is because you lose your support system at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you're 29, you're still with your dudes. When you're 35, you're still around them, kind of. But by the time you're 30, there's not many guys that are veterans, guys, girls, females. There's not very many veterans who stick around with their group for that entire time. So the demons that you're fighting with somebody else beside you that you really care about or you trust, those demons are still there the rest of your life. PTSD doesn't just stop because your hair goes gray.
Yeah.
You know, it's still going to be there. The difference is, one, you're so far removed that in your mind you compare it to some weakness, that it should be something that's gone. Or you just get to that age and you just can't take it anymore because you've been dealing with those demons for 20 plus years at that point. So that's one thing that I hope that we really accomplish in Zero Block 30, is that I've gotten so many messages from dudes who have been out of the armed forces, and they're like, hey man, like, it feels like I'm back home with my buddies. And that's, I would love that, to have Zero Block 30 be like a little community, where almost like a podcast version of going to the Veterans of Foreign War, you know, like,
yeah,
instead of drinking beer, like, you're drinking coffee on your way to work, like, listening to your buddies, like your war buddies, talk about bullshit that you would have. I feel like that's a really cool thing that we're doing. And that's one of the goals that I have for this show, is that you feel like you're at the VFW telling bullshit stories.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I never really, I haven't told you this yet though, but I mean, certainly for me, this podcast personally is one of the things in my life, that helped me, because, you know, just to indulge me here a little bit. You know, so I returned from Iraq 2009, and I was like you. You know, I didn't think PTSD was a real thing. I thought, you know, a lot of guys maybe made it up, and if you claimed you had it, you were weak-minded. And I thought it was all a bunch of hogwash, because I was a proud guy. You know, I was a West Pointer Army football player. I was like, you know what, we're stronger than this. I'm mentally tough. I'm not going to get PTSD. And then, you know, maybe around 2010 time frame, I started noticing that I was having more nightmares. One of the real freaky things that happened to me, and unfortunately still happens, is I'll be sleeping in the middle of the night, and my eyes will open, and I think I see people in the room that are trying to hurt me or something. So anyway, we're back in 2010, and I start getting these nightmares. And then we're in spring 2011, and I know in May I'm going to resign my commission from active duty. I'm going to leave Fort Hood. I'm going to move back to New Jersey, look for a job. And it was at this time that I was having a lot of trouble sleeping. You know, I was only getting a couple hours of sleep at night. And then compound that with all the other thoughts that are going through my head. Shit, I got to find a job now. I don't have anyone who's going to move into my house in Texas, so I'm going to have to pay a mortgage. But, oh, I don't have a job, so how am I going to pay this mortgage? And I can remember, it was probably about April, 2011. I had a particularly really, really rough week at work. And I came home on Friday and, like, you know, all good Irishmen do, break out the whiskey, sit alone with your thoughts.
Yeah. I've been known to partake.
Yeah. That's the best way to think. And I remember I'm sitting in my house and there's maybe like one or two lights on. It's super dark. I'm sitting there, my bottle of Jameson at the kitchen table, and I got all these thoughts going through my head all together. And, you know, everybody has issues from time to time or problems they're dealing with. But if you then take all those problems and you're thinking about them at once, it can seem really daunting. And yeah, it got to the point where I was about half the bottle down, where I said to myself, what if I just end it? What if I just don't make it home to New Jersey? You know, then what? So then that thought is festering in my head. And then a few more drinks later, I remember one of my buddies that was living in my house at the time, he had a gun in his closet. And I got up from the table and I walked and I'm standing in the doorway and I'm thinking, am I going to do this? All right, if I do this, what's my family going to think? But if I do this, all these problems I'm dealing with, they'll just go away. And I won't have these nightmares anymore. I won't have problems sleeping. It'll all just be over. And, you know, I don't know if people believe in divine intervention, serendipity, whatever. But while I'm standing there in the doorway wondering if I'm going to go grab this gun, I get a text from one of my buddies who I'm supposed to do a shore house with that summer. And it was a group text, and it said, "Yo, fuckers, get your dicks hard. 1 month till summer, we're going to kill it." Yeah. And I read that text, and it kind of gave me pause. And I was like, all right, I got a support group, I think. And the next day, you know, I went out and I sought out some help. And by no means am I like 1,000,000%, 100% cured, but that was the start of my recovery. And I think, as I had mentioned, my biggest thing was the fact that there's that stigma around PTSD. It's even in the name. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. You hear disorder, you think, that's a bad thing to have. I don't want to have that. If I tell people I have that, they're going to think less of me. But it was that day that I decided, all right, you got to go get some help. I let my pride get the best of me to get me into a position where I was too close, where something bad could have happened, and I needed to pull myself out of that. So I sucked up my pride, and I went and I got some help. And, you know, I still talk to people today, but what I mentioned about this podcast is I do all sorts of things now to keep me involved and keep my mind on positive things. And that's what's great about this podcast, and that's what I hope it can be for other people listening, that there can be that interaction, there can be that escape to let you know that, hey, there's other people out there, we're all dealing with the same things, we're all going to deal with it differently, but let's deal with it together. So
yeah, I hope so. I hope people listen and they feel they kind of get to know our personalities, know who we are as people. They know that I'm a dad, that I like love being a husband, and like I was a pretty good Marine, and I sought out mental health providers. I did. Like, I had to. Like, yeah. I absolutely had to. And there is no weakness involved with it. And that's why I feel like that was the biggest issue that I had with what Trump said, is that as the commander-in-chief, you have got to be precise, especially amongst that community when you're talking about PTSD-related issues, because people will hear it, they'll hear the weakness, and that's exactly what they run from. If we run from anything as a community, it's even the very inkling of an appearance of being weak. So when you make that mistake, that's a large mistake.
Absolutely.
Was the totality of the comments wrong? No. Were the totality of the comments right? Yes, they were. But making the mistake that he did is a huge mistake whenever you have somebody that was like you a couple years ago right on the precipice. If somebody's at that point and they hear the commander-in-chief imply that it's a weakness that they're having these demons, it's not a good thing.
No.
We always need to make sure that we're concentrating that it's a tough issue to go with, and it always will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when he makes those comments, it only perpetuates the problem. It makes it worse.
And I like to be real on the podcast too, because we say, oh, that it won't hurt your career. It 100% hurts your career. Mm-hmm. Like, it does.
Yeah.
But your career is not worth your life.
Agreed.
Like, if people say that you can go and get mental health treatment while you're still in the Marine Corps and still continue to be on active duty, if you have a level of like PTSD that's bad enough, you won't. You won't, but it's not worth your life.
No, you're right. You're right.
And I was in that boat that the Marine Corps was my life, and the Army becomes your life, mm-hmm. and the Navy becomes your life, and the Air Force becomes your life. It is your life.
Yeah, it's all you know.
But it's actually not your fucking life.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy thing. Like, you're so ingrained that this is my entire life. If something happens, you know what? The Marine Corps still functions pretty fucking well without me.
Like, without Uncle Chaps, they're still chugging along?
Surprising or not, there's still dogs that are able to find bombs and drugs and shit. Like, that's there awesome. Really is. So you think, oh, I need to be here for my guys. They're going to be fine without you. Yeah. They're going to be fine without you. They just want to make sure that you're able to go to the VA when you're 70 years old with them, eat a fucking donut, drink some coffee, and just be dudes and chilling together.
Yeah, and
so if you're listening and you're struggling, get fucking help, man. Like, get fucking help.
Yeah, man.
It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you a pussy. It doesn't make you any of those things. In fact, it makes you strong.
Yeah.
To say that I have these issues and I need to go help, get help, it makes you strong. It's like trying to fucking load your house together and move. Sure, you could do it by yourself. You can completely do it by yourself. You can move all your shit out of your two-story apartment in Boston and go down several flights of stairs by yourself. But it's fucking dumb to do that when there's people that want to help you.
Yeah, we have a saying in the military, work smarter, not harder. Get that help. And I mean, you know, there's a hotline. You know, call the hotline. You know, the number's we'll post it, but it's, you know, 1-800-273-TALK, which is 8255. There's people that are willing to talk. And if you know what? If you're like me and sometimes saying the words out loud, because I remember my father came to me at one point.
Let me just hold up. It took a lot of strength for you to do what you did and tell your story that's that personal. That takes a lot of strength. And I'm sure the people that are listening know that it takes a lot to put your mental health out there and say those struggles. So I appreciate you, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, no, I remember my father came to me one time, and it's the Irish Catholic thing, man. We just ignore problems. We push stuff under the rug, and it's just not in our nature to talk. And he said to me, you know, listen, if you ever need to talk, I'll listen. And even still to this day, like, it's tough for me to say certain things out loud. And I kind of used this platform as a way for me to express my feelings, and I appreciate everyone indulging me. But you know, they have other ways you can get help if you don't feel like talking. There's a chat and a text function now. There's even, I didn't know this till today, which is great. There are a bunch of apps now you can download on your iPhone to get help. There's one for PTSD, there's one for insomnia, there's one for depression, problem solving, meditation. You gotta check out
the
resources.
Is there one for having diarrhea since 2007?
They're working on that one. That's in the beta phase right now, I think.
Yeah.
So just be patient. Really keep patient. Keep it clenched. And help's on the way, chaps.
So that was heavy talk with me and Connor. we like to keep it light. I mean, I keep saying that we kind of keep it light, but we don't really keep it light. Like, we talk about heavy issues and we talk about light issues. So I guess you could really say that Zero Block 30 is kind of like a 19-year-old's period. It could be really it could be really heavy some days and really light other days.
Just depends on the month.
Yeah. Well, I guess not, because I guess most people would say that periods are bad all the time, and I hope people don't say that about the podcast, that it's bad all the time. So maybe Zero Block 30 is the period of a podcast isn't really the best tagline. We'll have to keep rolling that one around. So with Connor telling you and me telling you that there's so many outlets for you to do it, if you don't go out and do it, you should probably just fucking haze yourself, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the best. That's the only other option. Haze yourself. Beat your face.
All right, so hazing. Hazing, I feel like as a staff NCO and you as a captain, we have to make this little caveat that hazing is not authorized and we frown upon it.
Yeah, it's very frowned upon.
But that being said, send us all your hazing stories because we will tell them all the time because I absolutely fucking love hazing. Like, and I like hazing in a fun way.
Exactly.
I don't like hazing where it's violent or mean or vicious. I like hazing like a story that Connor's going to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I don't want to talk about hazing like you see in Full Metal Jacket where they hold someone down and beat them with bars of soap. That is not as good to me as mental warfare is. And yeah. there's a whole mess of funny things that you will see in both the Army and the Marines, and I'm sure elsewhere, that would constitute as hazing. A few examples, if someone tells you to go get the Humvee keys, spoiler, yeah. There are no keys to Humvees. Or if your NCO tells a private, hey, go get an exhaust sample from that tank over there. Well, there's no such thing as an exhaust sample. Or don't forget to bring your Chemlite batteries. These are just a few of the examples of things that NCOs primarily will do to younger enlisted soldiers just to mess with them. And one that really stuck out for me because it ended up being a pretty funny story was as it relates to a bag of grid squares. Now, grid squares are, this is tough without the visual, so I'll try to give a visual, but on a military map, there's grid squares that are 1 kilometer, 1 square kilometer, and you use that to navigate the map and the terrain if you need to give.
The kind of map, okay, I'll give them an example. The kind of map, whatever, remember in Inglourious Basterds, when Lieutenant Aldo Raine is sitting there with his with the Jew dogs, like getting ready to bash the guy's face in with the bat, and he's like, "Now I want you to take your little Jew finger or your little Nazi finger and point it on this here map and show me where the artillery is." That's a topographical map.
Yeah, topographical map. That was the word that was escaping me. So thank you for that, Chaps, being my good NCO, keeping me in check. I appreciate it.
There it is.
So anyway. You know, every morning after PT, my platoon sergeant, or as in the artillery community, we call smoke, and we call him smoke because way back during the Revolutionary War, when you'd fire artillery and all the cannons had been fired, there's all smoke in the battlefield. The platoon sergeant or the chief of the firing battery, he would go check the cannons, and he would be standing out there while there was just smoke all around. So the nickname smoke came about. So after Monday morning PT one time, Smoke's out there giving the announcements for the day, and he's letting us know that we are going to do land nav that day. And we had 4 new soldiers who showed up that weekend, so this Monday morning was their first experience with the platoon. And land nav is land navigation. It's where you go out into a field, out into the woods, whatever. You just have a map and a compass. And a protractor.
And it fucking sucks. And you have a really sweaty dick and nuts for like a couple days at a time. It's fucking terrible.
Yeah. Because obviously now we have all these great GPS systems, but before you can run, you gotta crawl and you gotta learn how to do things the old fashioned way, because God forbid.
Which is bullshit. Can we say it's bullshit?
Do you think it's bullshit?
Yes, dude. It's like making fucking third graders write in cursive. It doesn't fucking make sense.
Who cares
if you have penmanship? My daughter will never, ever need to write in cursive. But the fact that they teach it to her in fourth grade is mind-blowing. Like, why? Write in print or fucking type it like a normal person. Because if you hand me something in cursive, I want to throw you down a flight of stairs.
That's fair. But, like, what if you're out on a patrol in your Humvee and your Blue Force tracker goes down and you have no idea where the hell you are? You got to have...
Well, sure, but...
Well, that's my example.
Well, I feel like that's a good example, but you're not in your own fucking truck. Like, everybody else has one, too. So, I mean, follow somebody else.
All right, so
the lead vehicle.
The chances that you would ever actually need to know how to do land navigation the old-fashioned way these days is probably pretty slim, but sometimes in the military we do things stupid, and that's the way we do it.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah, no, that's putting it lightly, to say the least. So, Smoke dismisses the platoon from formation, and he grabs up these 4 new soldiers. And, I mean, they're brand new, fresh out of AIT, advanced individual training, which is after basic training, you go to AIT to learn whatever skill you're going to be, whether you're going to be an infantryman, an artilleryman, intel, whatever. You go to that school to learn your specific trade. So these guys, brand new, they're like 18 years old. And Smoke says to him, all right, make sure when we come back, this morning for land nav, you bring your your bag of grid squares with you that you got issued. And, you know, I could see them all, like, the wheels spinning, like, they're looking at each other like, okay, and they're just, you know, Roger smoke. So it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours later, whatever it was, we all show up to HQ, and we're getting ready to board the truck, go out to the Lynn, of course.
Headquarters, for those keeping score at home.
Sorry, yeah, HQ, headquarters. And we're gonna board these trucks and head out to the field and hit the land nav course that the battalion had set up for us. And we're waiting around, and so Smoke sees the four new guys, and he asks them, you know, you guys got your grid squares, right? And they all kind of look at each other. And remember, grid squares are not a thing. This is not actually a thing. But again, you can see the wheels turning. You know, they're thinking like, shit, do I lie? Do I tell them I don't have them? Do I admit that I don't know what the hell grid squares are? But three of them were just real quick. Yep, Roger Smoke, got them. And then one guy goes,
fake it till you make it.
Yeah, fake it till you make it. But then one guy goes, oh no, Smoke, I forgot mine in the barracks. So I'm fighting back laughter because I'm like, either he is really full of shit.
You forgot these things that don't exist in the barracks.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what he's thinking.
In a very specific spot.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But I'll never forget it. Smoke, straight as can be, goes, all right, well, we got about 10 minutes. Run back to the barracks and get them. Barracks are basically like across the street. If you had to go run and get them, it should take like 5 minutes. 5 minutes goes by. No sign of this soldier. 10 minutes. 20 minutes. Dude comes back 30 minutes later. And I could see it. I could see Smoke is about to go off. And he was an intimidating dude, too. He was an old, grizzled NCO. He's like 36 or 37. 6 foot. Black dude from Louisiana. 225. Thick dude. And You could just see it that he was pissed, but he had a great poker face. So the soldier finally comes back. Smoke locks him up along with the other three.
So locks him up means like makes him stand in position of attention or yep. Parade rest. Or...
And he says, and he's pissed because, you know, we're behind schedule now because we were supposed to be out at the field already. And he said, where you been, high speed? Huh? Speak up. And the soldier, he just kind of like whispers like, I don't have my grid square, Smoke. He goes, you don't have your grid squares? No, Smoke. He goes, all right. Do you know why you don't have your grid squares and why these other jokers don't have theirs either? Yeah. And he looks at like the other guys. He's like, yeah, I didn't know y'all were lying. I was slinging steel down range when you were still in diapers, shit in your pants. And the soldier goes, whispers again because he's timid. He doesn't know what the hell is going on. He's like, I don't know, Smoke. And then Smoke like is screaming because grid squares don't fucking exist. God damn. Are you sick? Do you need to go to the hospital? You must be sick because, boy, you are outside your mind. You're outside your goddamn mind. Lord Jesus, this boy out here making me cuss. Fuck. And he's heated. So it's at that point, after he chewed him out a little bit, that, you know, we're going to go out to the field. So I take my platoon out.
See,
to
but
the field.
What we don't realize, and I'll speak to this as the staff and CO in the room, like we fuck with people to the point where it makes us get home later. Like
yeah.
he set you guys back by like 45 minutes by doing this shit.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like terrible. He was pissed.
My story is a little bit different.
Well, hold on. Let me finish.
My mistake.
Because that here comes the hazing part. He says, Lieutenant Crehan, you know, take the platoon. We'll be behind you. I said, all right, Roger Smoke. So I take my platoon out there. They show up like an hour later. These four dudes look like they've been through hell. They're sweaty. And they were in like their ACUs, the Army Combat Uniform. They weren't in PTs. He must have run them probably 5 or 6 miles, push-ups, sit-ups, all sorts of stuff. They were dirty. They were sweaty. They looked tired. And I remember he comes up. He goes, All right, sir. I softened them up for you. They're all yours. So then he goes off to the platoon, but then I took them aside and I explained to them why it wasn't a good idea that they were lying. And that was what it was, that he wasn't doing that for kicks. He wasn't screwing with them, asking them if they had their grid squares for kicks. He was doing that to teach them a lesson that if you don't know something, especially in combat, speak up. If you don't know what the mission is or you're not clear on something, ask your squad leader, ask a platoon leader, because I'd rather you ask me than we get out there and you think you're supposed to be doing something and then you get your battle buddy hurt or you put us as a platoon in a bad position because you screwed up. So ultimately what I'm saying is God bless NTOs because they have a hell of a way of teaching lessons, and a lot of times it's pretty funny for others to watch if you're not the one getting yelled at.
And it's also not always noble, and I'll tell some of my stories. So when I was I just like to fuck with people. I mean, I'll be honest.
All right.
Like, I always tell people that the main reasons why I wanted to get promoted fast was, one, I was tired of getting fucked with. Two, I wanted to make more money. And three, I wanted to be the one that fucked with people.
Mm-hmm.
So three was probably actually one. I lived to fuck with people. So I was a lead instructor at the dog school here. And I would make bitches run everywhere. Like, and I say bitches, like, I refer to everybody who was my troop at the time, like, as one of my bitches. Like, you're my bitches. So, like, which is probably isn't the most politically correct thing in the world, but that's okay. So whenever I was there, I would tell a motherfucker, if he fucked something up, I would look at him and be like, okay. So we would be in, like, a 400-yard field, and I would point at a tree and say, go get me a leaf off of that tree. That's like 400. That's like, I would say, go get me that leaf. And so they would run across the little 400-yard field to go and run, like across the field to get their little leaf. They would come back. I would inspect the leaf, but that's not the one I wanted. Go back.
Of course not.
Go get that leaf. So that's the kind of games that I would play. And it wasn't always noble. That was just because we had downtime, and
sure.
it kept me interested. It kept the day going fast. My favorite thing that I would see, which isn't really hazing, it's just kind of something that happens. So in the Marine Corps, we hump everywhere. Like, and hump, I mean, we put on 60, 70-pound bags, and we'll march for miles. And that makes your body heat go up like crazy. It makes like, I did it after I got out of the Marine Corps and wore this little calorie watch. And if you go for, like, 8 miles, you seriously burn, like, 1,400 calories in 18 miles if you're carrying – or 8 miles if you're carrying that amount of weight.
You still wear one of those calorie watches? Oh, wait. No. You have a women's watch on right now, right? You wear women's watches?
No watch today.
No watch today?
Okay. But as a side note, that was rude. So we're going – we're going on these humps, right? And so a lot of guys really wanted to get out of the ones that didn't mean anything, because there are certain humps that meant something, like you were going to the next level of training where you can – it really improves your marks, where you can get promoted. But some of them were just because it's fucking Friday and we hump on Fridays. And so a kid will be like, oh, I'm having heat stroke, or I'm having heat exhaustion. So my favorite gunny, man, his name is Gunny Fuentes. So Gunny Fuentes would fucking come up and be like, oh, good. We got somebody that wants to fucking go down. You're having a heat stroke? Corman, take this Marine's temperature right fucking now. So the corman would be like, okay, so we get his little temperature out and be like, put this in your mouth, and he'd be like, No. We are not gonna take his temperature orally because that will not be accurate. The oral temperature is not an accurate representation of what this devil dog's internal temperature is. Stick that fucker up his ass. So, and if the company gunny is requesting it, the corpsman has to do it.
Absolutely.
Like, because it's the request from high. Like, it really is. And it's a more accurate temperature. So he can't even get in trouble for it by saying it's hazing when it is 100% hazing.
Absolutely.
But you're not saying that it's hazing. So then the Marine feels fine. You know, like the Marine's like, oh, no, I'm feeling mm-hmm. better. And Gunny Fuentes at that point is not having it. And he's like, oh, fuck no. He's like, you said you're at risk of being heat exhaustion, so I need to exercise extreme caution. Extreme caution.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to be held responsible. He doesn't want to get in trouble.
They take this dude's trousers and pull them straight around his ankles in front of God and everybody. Like, so you have an entire battalion of people. They don't bring them behind a Porter John or in the woods or anything. Motherfuckers on the side of the trail, trousers around his ankles, can't even take his boots off. So he's basically looks like an overgrown toddler with his fucking ass up, getting like a diaper change. And then they bring out this fucking thing that we like to call the silver bullet. The silver bullet's about a 5-inch long, about as thick as a pencil thermometer. Mm-hmm. But it's super accurate within like a thousandth of a like degree. So it's like crazy accurate. Why they need a rectal temperature that's accurate, I don't know. But they fucking have them. So this dude is sitting there in front of all these people, males, females, doesn't matter. Ass balls out, fucking hairy as shit, looks like a spider in between his butt cheeks. Sticks him in the ass, and he's got the thermometer in his ass and looks like a full-blown turkey. So his body temperature comes back well within the normal range. So Gunny Fuentes tells him, now get your dumb ass up and get back in formation. We're finishing the fucking hike.
Yeah.
So he goes through all this shit, makes it up, gets his ass punctured by a thermometer, and still has to get back in formation. All that being said, if you're listening and you're a young devil puppy, a young Marine, just fucking do the training, man.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do the training, even though it sucks in the moment, it's going to be better than the alternative. I fucking promise you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean that, and even, you know, your story about telling the young Marines to go get the leaf, I feel like there are lessons to be learned with all of that. And even if it's the leaf one, maybe it's, hey, listen to your leadership. Whether you don't understand why you're going to get that leaf, well, Uncle Chaps told me to get that leaf. He knows what he's doing. I'm putting my trust in him. I'll go get it. And if it sucks, like, you know, where you get a thermometer up your ass, I feel like sometimes the best lessons are the ones that are attached to traumatic experiences, as bad as that is. I mean, like, don't you walk underneath windows now?
Oh, no. I'm kind of sitting by one now, and I'm kind of nervous about it, but I'm going to persevere and push through with the podcast because that's fucking courage.
All right.
So,
but yeah, you get the point. That's how you learn lessons sometimes. It might seem stupid at the time, but there is a point behind all of the quote-unquote hazing.
No, there is. And the lesson behind getting a thermometer up your ass is don't take the corpsman's attention away when it doesn't deserve to be taken away. I mean,
and that's just a good lesson for life.
Yeah. I mean, don't say you're having heat stroke if you're not having heat stroke. It's not a good idea.
No, that's never going to end up well for you, believe me.
But hazing as a whole, we frown upon it. We don't think it's good. There's just tons and tons of hazing stories. My favorite ones always involve the shower. I love it when dudes don't shower and have to be told by other grown men to shower. That's always a top-notch story whenever that happens.
I don't even know how that comes about. How do you know, like, how do you go through life and it doesn't click for you that you need to shower on at least an every other day basis?
Well, that's like hazing lesson number one if you're in the Marine Corps. You get to your, after, remember I told the sea drop bag drag where you're you're taking that. Well, whenever you get back, you're super sweaty, so you do what's called a PT shower. So they strip you down to all your clothes. This is right after the recruits, where's your penis story. All right. So they make sure everybody's good. Recruit, where the fuck is your penis happens. And then they tell everybody, get online right damn now. You do a right face. And then they tell you this little phrase that really shapes your entire adult life at this point, where they tell you, okay, motherfuckers, get nut to butt right damn now. So,
ooh, is that a good memory for you?
It's not bad. So you're like butt ass naked, and everybody is smashed together like an accordion. And
don't say the Marines aren't progressive.
Yeah, being naked with a bunch of dudes is a good damn time. So it's just it's a fun and different experience. And I always tell people it's hard to explain what it feels like to have 90 other naked dudes smashed against you and you're not sexually attracted to one of them because they all look exactly like you. Mm. Like, they shave everybody's head. Everybody looks exactly the same, just varying degrees of skin color all throughout the room. And everybody's dick and balls is flying everywhere.
Yeah,
not
so
a good time.
But I guess maybe the lesson learned there is that we're all God's children and treat everyone nice because we're all the same. Is that the lesson learned? Or was there no lesson learned by standing nut to butt with 90 other dudes?
I feel like the lesson with 90 other dudes butt ass naked is that if I could do this, I can do anything.
There you go. That's a good lesson.
Yeah, it is. Like, this was tough. Like, I'm doing college work at UTSA whenever I'm out of the Marine Corps and be like, well, this math problem is pretty hard, but it's not. Well, I guess that's a bad example. I shouldn't say it's not 90 dudes in the naked shower hard.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be appropriate.
No. Yeah, no, sometimes when I'm having a tough day, I'm like, well, nobody's yelling at me. Nobody's trying to shoot at me or try to kill me, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah. So, I think that's Zero Block 30 this week, man. Like, it's, I feel like we are doing some good here, and
I hope so.
If you're struggling, again, I want to touch on it, because we're not going to be this heavy all the time. We're not going to be telling stories, and it was kind of hard. I don't know if it was, you guys heard, it was difficult for us to transition from such a heavy topic to try to be lighter. But I don't feel like we have to all the time. There's sometimes that we can joke around right after we're telling stories about PTSD, but we can bring it back to the point where if you are struggling 100%, call somebody.
Yeah, man, call me.
My Twitter account, the DMs are open. Yeah, mine too. If you want to talk to somebody, if you want to talk to me or Connor, hit us up. There's been people that's done it in the past, and I'm totally about that. So if you want to hit me up, follow me at Uncle Chaps on Twitter, Captain Cons on Twitter, and we will fucking talk to your ass until you get the help you need. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.